Hi there, and welcome to our second episode of this palliative care teaching podcast. Today we're going to look at the issue of controlling the symptom of breathlessness using drugs. Last week we talked about the non-drug management of breathlessness, and today I'm back with Ting Tar, our registrar in palliative care. My name's Claire Bates. I'm one of the consultants here at BHRUT. We're going to talk together about this, but my first question to you, Ting, is what are you doing recording a podcast at 25 to 7 on a Friday evening? Have you not got anything better that you could be up to?
Well, I wish I did, but at least I'm going to use the excuse of the lockdown and pandemic for having zero plans on a Friday evening. but also because we've had, you know, a really tough week managing these symptoms, several weeks, and so we thought it was really important to cover this topic and get it out there. So to lay it out, we're going to start with managing shortness of breath and the associated agitation in patients already end of life, but also thinking about people that aren't dying and that we're actually, you know, hoping for recovery. So Claire, can you tell us a little bit about the common medications we use in this situation?
Yeah, so essentially there are two drugs that we're using here. Usually it's morphine and midazolam. So occasionally we would go for an alternative opioid if the patient has renal failure and the EGFR less than 30, then we'd be using oxycodone. But for simplicity here, we're talking about morphine and midazolam, and the two together, there's some evidence suggests, is more effective than one on its own to manage the symptom of breathlessness.
Mm-hmm. And for opioid naive patients, what kind of starting doses do we tend to use?
So we're looking at 2.5 to 5 milligrams for both of those drugs.
Mm-hmm. And with COVID patients, that seemed to be much more symptomatic. It sounds like we often have to use higher doses in these patients.
Yeah, so I think experience has taught us over the last few months that actually our normal doses aren't enough for patients who've got COVID pneumonia. So we're often starting at 5 milligrams of each or even higher. But I guess the thing to say about that is we'd probably prefer people to discuss with the palliative care team if they're thinking of using higher doses. We just want to make sure that the drugs are effective, but that we're not doing anything to kind of hasten someone's deterioration.
Mm. And equally with patients that might be on background opioids, then we'd really encourage you to call us at the palliative care team for advice and figuring out the starting doses.
Yeah.
And in terms of actually assessing respiratory distress versus normal changes that we might see in breathing when somebody is dying naturally, can you help us sort of separate those out a little bit?
Yes, it's hard, isn't it? How do you know whether the person that you're seeing is distressed? So we talk in palliative care about the symptom of dyspnea, which is the suffering of difficulty in breathing, as opposed to just having a rapid respiratory rate. So What we can't always ask someone if they're not able to give us a kind of verbal account of how they feel. So we're looking for signs, particularly in people who are semi-conscious or even sort of more unconscious, of grimacing, you know, sort of moaning, even just a kind of tension, I think, that you can see from the end of the bed in someone's body, that they're not relaxed and that their laboured breathing is causing them suffering and distress. And if we see that, we want very quickly to get on top of that using the medication that I've just mentioned, which I should have said we give subcutaneously in the main, though it can also be given IV if there's a line in.
And I think differentiating the distress versus the natural changes is really important, and also conveying that to family. So when we see changed stokes breathing or periods of apnea, it's really important to reassure family that this isn't distressing in itself for the patient. And equally, in some patients that develop respiratory secretions, which can be noisy and rattly, often that doesn't cause any distress for the patient, and it's about sort of assessing that and, again, reassurance to family when needed.
Yeah.
And in terms of finding guidance about starting doses in our non-COVID and COVID patients?
Yeah, so we've put information on the intranet under the palliative care section. It's also on the guidebook app and also on microguide in the prescribing guidelines. I mean, when the pandemic started, we made some specific guidance around management of breathlessness in COVID patients. So there's a flow chart that is available in those places, and also out on the wards actually. So there are yellow folders on all the wards in the Trust that contain these kind of helpful guidelines information.
Brilliant. And then patients that aren't dying and that we're hoping are going to get better, actually, that's often a bit of a grey area. How do we help these patients that are really, really symptomatic from their breathlessness, but we're worried about doing more harm than good?
Yeah, so there's an anxiety, isn't there, about giving opioids or midazolam to people who aren't at the end of life, but you can see are really struggling with their breathing. And I guess the first thing to say is that we're always saying this in palliative care, but you must reverse the reversible first. So why is this person increasingly breathless? Have they got a PE? Is there a worsening bacterial pneumonia on top of the COVID? You know, what's going on medically? And so we would work really closely with the ward consultants to try and bottom that out. But at the same time, I think there is real value in controlling symptoms, minimising distress, and actually using the same drugs that we've just talked about. So you can use morphine and midazolam in small doses very safely. And often what we've seen is that that can help people to tolerate the other medical interventions that they're having. So a CPAP mask, the distress of that, you know, safe low doses of morphine and midazolam can aid that person's recovery, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've definitely been seeing that. And with benzodiazepines, you mentioned midazolam, but oftentimes we've seen that people might reach for lorazepam more readily. And I think that there is this kind of misconception that lorazepam is a bit more innocuous and much safer than midazolam. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think perhaps the important thing to remember is that lorazepam hangs around in the body for a lot longer than midazolam does. So the half-life can be up to 20 hours. And so, you know, into the next day and beyond, you can still be getting the effects of the single dose of lorazepam that you've given. Multiple doses obviously would be even worse. Whereas midazolam is a quicker acting, shorter duration drug. So in palliative care, that kind of faster onset and offset is probably more appropriate actually for the flexible management of someone's symptoms when you don't want to cause harm and you just want to minimise the distress.
Mm-hmm. And with the use in patients that are still having active treatment and aren't dying, it doesn't sound like we have any formal policies or guidance on this.
We don't. So I guess the advice is call the palliative care team. You know, we want to help. We want to work in a collaborative way with our colleagues out on the wards. So it's really up to us to kind of partnership work with the teams out on the wards. Mm. And I guess perhaps to say then that it's an individualised approach to each patient. So what might be right for one isn't right for another.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Claire. So that was a very quick sort of overview of the management of breathlessness and any associated agitation. You guys might have lots of other questions, so please get in touch with us if you want to discuss things in more detail, or if there are patients with other complicating factors. Palliative care team is available 24/7 on 6934. So thank you for your time. We hope you're not using your Friday night to listen to this. And next time we're hoping to cover communication, particularly essential comm skills and difficult questions that we've been faced with recently.
Yeah, we're having quite a lot of feedback from people on the wards saying that would be helpful, and it's been one of the biggest challenges of the pandemic so far is how to get our comms right with all the PPE and no visitors in the hospital and so on. So check in with us for the next episode, and thank you for listening. Bye.